So as we begin the fourth chapter of 1 Samuel, the first sentence says, "And the word of Samuel came to all Israel." That is, Samuel came to be known to be a prophet in all Israel, and his word was spread to all Israel. Now, many of the authorities seem to think that this sentence should have been continued with a part of the last chapter, because it seems to go with what was said previously and have nothing to do with the battle that we're going to read about in the first part of this chapter that the Israelites had with the Philistines. It doesn't mean that Samuel encouraged them to go into battle, or that Samuel was consulted as a means of determining whether or not they should be involved in this battle. But it just simply means that Samuel became renowned as a person who had received the prophecy of God. His word came to all Israel. That is, those who were truly devoted to God would come to him for advice on spiritual matters. And it may also simply mean that this prophecy about Eli and the destruction of his family was now spread throughout all Israel. So the next sentence in this first verse of chapter 4 says, "Now Israel went out against the Philistines to battle, and pitched beside Ebenezer, and the Philistines pitched in Aphek." We see here that Israel seems to be the aggressor. They're trying to break this great yoke of oppression that the Philistines have had on them for some years now. And this is thought to have occurred some 20 to 40 years after the death of Samson. It seems logical that it would be about 40 years after the death of Samson, since Eli reigned for 40 years, and this is right at the very end of Eli's life. This place known as Ebenezer wasn't really named this for some years after this by Samuel, but it's located in the western part of southern Palestine. Some think that it was in the tribe of Judah. Others think that it was further north, even into the tribe of Dan, and immediately blocking the access of the Philistines to Shiloh, which is where the tabernacle was located. So we don't know exactly where it was, except that it's in the southern and western portion of Palestine. And the Philistines pitched in Aphek, and Aphek is going to be near Ebenezer. It's further west than Ebenezer is, and so the two armies are located in near proximity to each other. And they're all pitched for battle. The Philistines are a well-organized nation. They have a federation of their cities or states, if you want to refer to them in that sense. And they're really better organized than the Israelites are, the Israelites being more of a loose federation of tribes. They also have the ability to work with iron, and the Israelites do not have this ability to have iron, and so the Philistines have an edge in that respect. And we're going to see, as a result of them losing the battle to the Philistines here, that then they get the idea that they need to be more centrally organized and have a more central head, and they want to have a king. Verse 2, "And the Philistines put themselves in array against Israel." And when Israel brought the battle to them, Israel seems to be the aggressor, then the Philistines definitely were going to defend themselves. They put themselves in array against Israel, and we're going to see then that they're going to have a good defense. "And when they joined battle, Israel was smitten before the Philistines, and they slew of the army in the field about 4,000 men." So the first day of battle, the first contact they had in this particular battle, Israel lost the battle. They had about 4,000 men slain. And so this was a fairly decisive defeat in this particular battle. And it was one to make Israel stop and wonder, you know, what has happened? Why are we being defeated? What can we do to reverse this situation? And it was a sad occurrence. And what the people didn't seem to realize, or didn't seem to want to realize, was the fact that Israel was now in a state of sin. Because of the wicked priests, because of the practices that were going on in Shiloh, in the tabernacle, the perversion of the worship to God, the whole nation was suffering under this cloud of being guilty of sin in the presence of God, and consequently God was not with them like he had promised to be with them had they remained faithful. But instead of turning to God, instead of repenting of their sin, instead of backing off and really getting things right with their true leader, the living God, they took some other measures in order to improve their military ability. Verse 3, "And when the people were come into the camp, the elders of Israel said, Wherefore hath the Lord smitten us today before the Philistines?" Now the first thing to do is to blame it on the Lord. The Lord has smitten us. The Lord has done this. And they don't realize that it's because of their sin. They don't want to realize what the true reason is. They want to think, well, just the Lord is just being a little bit lax in his duty. He's just not with us like he should be. And let's do something more to get the Lord to be more faithful to us. So they say, "Let us fetch the ark of the covenant of the Lord out of Shiloh unto us, that when it cometh among us, it may save us out of the hand of our enemies." Now this ark of the covenant, which was located in the tabernacle in the most holy place in Shiloh, it was a high and holy symbol. It was the most solemn of all the symbols that they had in Israel. And it being located between the cherubim with the mercy seat was to have the very presence of God. It was to be the place where God would meet with his people. And so they felt that by bringing this object, this ark, this chest that contained some of the most holy elements of remembrance that they had. It had Aaron's rod that budded. The Ten Commandments on the two tables of stone were there. Some of the manna from heaven was there. And so this was the most holy of all of the items that could be had in the whole nation of Israel. They thought by bringing this out onto the battlefield that it would then necessarily bring God into their presence and give them the victory. Not wanting to realize that because of their sin, God had left their presence. They couldn't force God into something that God wasn't willing to participate in. And they had some other correction that needed to be made in the way of correcting their sinful activities. They went about this in a way to try to force God, and they couldn't force God into something like this. Actually, by looking upon the materialistic side of this, just the presence of the ark itself, regardless of the circumstances, are going to necessarily bring about the presence of God, they turn this ark into an idol. As though God were located in this object, and regardless of where it went or what happened, here was God. They arbitrarily had God with them. Now, that's the way idolaters look upon their images, upon their idols, and it's just not the way that God operates. God was going to be in their presence if they were faithful, and he had specifically instructed that this ark be left in Shiloh. It was to be in the tabernacle. That was the place where God was to meet with the people, and had they done things according to the way God wanted to be done, this ark would have been left there, and then God would have given them the victory in their battles simply because they were faithful people following after him. But they wanted to remain unfaithful and bring the ark out into the battlefield and there force God to be in their presence and to give them the victory. And it just didn't work that way. Because of their sin, God had left the presence of the ark. And they actually were transgressing to bring the ark out like this. But anyway, they decided that they would fetch the ark of the covenant of the Lord, and that it was going to come among them, and it would save them out of the hands of the enemies. This is another example of man desiring to use his own ways, to use his own means, to bring about salvation, to bring about some kind of a good benefit, and not really consulting God, not considering the mind, the teaching, the Word of God. And consequently, we're going to see that it brings about disaster. Verse 4. "So the people sent to Shiloh, that they might bring from thence the ark of the covenant of the Lord of hosts, which dwelleth between the cherubims. And the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were there with the ark of the covenant of God." And to make matters worse, they had these two wicked priests, these two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas. They're the very core and source of much of the sin and much of the difficulty that Israel is in today. The day that they're going to be again defeated by the Philistines. But they were the ones that were involved with the bearing of the ark. They were there with this ark of the covenant of God. And their very presence would have been enough to have caused God to have forsaken this people and this ark and this project that they were involved in with the Philistines. Verse 5, "And when the ark of the covenant of the Lord came into the camp, all Israel shouted with a great shout, so that the earth rang again." Now Israel had great confidence in this ark. And when it came into their presence, into the camp, they gave forth this great shout of confidence, this shout of victory, the shout that they were going to be successful. And we see here that just because man makes himself think that a thing is going to be right, it's going to be correct, it's going to be proper, doesn't necessarily make it right. All the shouting, all the celebration, all the victory talk is not going to make something right if it's not actually right. And that's the case here. They thought they were so empowered now. They thought they had so much of a great advantage by having the presence of this ark among them that they were shouting with such great noise that the earth rang again. And of course, we see that this stirred up even the Philistines because of this great celebration they were having. We would like to point out that the important thing is that man get right with God, that man take care of his sins, that man do according to what God would have him to do. And it's not how good a feeling a man can generate about a given thing. It's not how safe and secure a man can make himself seem to be or seem to feel. It's not how great he can celebrate and try to look like everything's all right. It's how things really are that's going to count. And so this great celebration is not going to stand him in good stead. They're not going to be victorious just because they feel that they're going to be victorious, because they have some getting right to do. They have some repenting to do. They have some changing to do before God's going to be with them. So let us remember that while a zealous feeling and a shout of joy may be appropriate and may be well and fine, it does not take the place of having the truth and having ourselves aligned with the true principles of God. We must first of all be in accordance with God's will, and then we're in a position to be able to give the joyful shout. We're going to close at that point. Till next time, this is NC Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.